Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
You know who brings his big boy trunks? My good buddy, Kerry Crowley. Doing a great job covering the Giants for the Barry and News Group. KC, what's up, brother?
Not much. Inaugural show. Happy to be here and excited for you right now.
Thanks, man. So can we break Bryce Harper? I mean, what's up? Where you at, Kerry? Come on.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I think that we'll be waiting a little while longer for any more news.
Yeah, so what do you, I mean, just as far as, I keep hearing rumblings, maybe it's Philly, there's been some reports out there that he's rounding third, and, you know, I'm one of those. It's just like free agent signings are like stadium deals. Let me know when the shovel, let me know when the dirt's in the air, let me know when the ink's on the paper. Anybody can tweet out anything as far as speculation. But when do you expect, and I know this is just you spitballing here, but you have more knowledge on this particular subject than most. When do you expect something to be consummated for Bryce Harper?
Surprise me if it's done within the next week, just because of the type of player Harper is and what he would like to do in his first year of a big contract that he knows is going to put a lot of pressure on him wherever he signs. I mean, you consider his situation. This is a guy who's 26 years old. He's going to be counted on to be the centerpiece of whatever team he goes to. And you want to get to spring training and start hitting live pitching right away.
Right.
You do not want to wait things out. And sure, he's got a lot to consider here. He's making a huge decision that'll change his family for, you know, the rest of his life and for potentially generations beyond that. But you want to also consider the immediate impact. And so to get into camp and to start swinging the bat right away, it's got to be pivotal for him.
No doubt. And if camp opens up and, you know, and he's not there, wherever he lands, it's just going to kind of hinder that progress in year number one. And let me ask you this, Kerry. Have you heard, I know the report that the Giants met with Bryce's representatives in Vegas, et cetera. Did you hear anything about a potential a number discussed as far as years or financial terms? Anything to that effect? Any kind of solid offer that the Giants have put out there for him?
Nothing in terms of a solid offer, but I know that it would make the Giants uncomfortable to go to 10 years on a deal. That's just not something that they're going to make a habit of. And of course, you're not making habits of long-term deals with guys who are 30 years old or 32 years old anymore, but this is Bryce Harper. He's 26. He's the power hitter who can come in and save this lineup right away. But I know that 10 years really isn't something that they would like to get done. And there's been talk of a shorter-term deal being on the table from the Giants, but what does that really mean? To me, you're probably looking in the 6 to 8 year range. I think that that's something that they're comfortable with.
I love 8 years is a potentially short deal, Kerry.
Exactly. So shorter than the Harper camp had put out there at the beginning of this whole process. Scott Boras wanted 10, 11, maybe even 12 years, but I don't see the Giants really going beyond 8 if they were to get a deal done.
Yeah, and I just feel like, Kerry, financially, Farhan has the green light in the sense, right? I mean, isn't it just his call at the end of the day, what he's going to offer him? I mean, has Giants ownership just basically handed the keys to the kingdom to him?
Well, in the case of a star player, I mean, Farhan will certainly have a gigantic impact in the contract negotiation discussions, but you're talking about a financial commitment that is not going to be shy of $200 million. So ownership is certainly involved in these discussions, and they usually are when you're talking about the bigger stars in the game, because you have to get the commitment from ownership and then to sign off on a deal like this. And maybe they're putting some pressure on Farhan to get a deal done here, saying, hey, we want to sell tickets. We'd like this guy in a uniform, and we'll still give you the flexibility to build the roster how you see fit. Yeah. But please, please consider making this guy a very serious offer.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And, I mean, if you're talking about something to just get excited about and a reason to go watch Giants baseball this year, if you roll out the same cast of characters that I've seen the last couple of years, say for a Parra or a Maben or a Solarte, which these guys aren't exactly household names and big-time needle movers, I mean, how much is there a need for Farhan to make that kind of an impact splash? I know he's playing the long game, and I know that they've got some constraints with guys contractually that maybe he'd probably like to get out from under a Longoria or even a Belt. But for the most part, he's kind of hamstrung in that respect. But there's also that need to put your fingerprints on this thing quickly and kind of that tug of war. How much does he need to make that kind of a splashy, quote-unquote, move, Kerry?
Well, I'll say this. You look at Bryce Harper, and everyone says that's a huge risk in the financial commitment. You want to know what's also a risk? Relying on Gerardo Parra and Yandier Solarte to lead you to the National League West title.
Thank you.
It's a huge risk on an annual basis to put all your chips in these small incremental improvements. And sure, you're going to see a significant improvement over time if you continue to go one by one, move by move, and overhauling this roster. But is that going to get you there by 2020, 2021? I'm not so sure. So I think at some point they really do need to consider something that is more of a splash, and not just a name or a dollar figure that would make a splash, but someone who could really turn around this lineup or turn around this pitching staff and make the Giants a force to be reckoned with in the National League West and really help facilitate that, not necessarily a rebuild, but a retool that the Giants have kind of embarked on this offseason.
Yeah, we keep hearing that phrase, retool. Kerry Crowley, who covers the Giants for the Bay Area News Group on 95.7 The Game. Ryan Covey with you at @KO_Crowley, doing a great job covering all things San Francisco Giants. All right, let's talk about him. Parra, Maben, and Solarte. We'll start with Parra. What's his role as of now? I imagine all three of these guys were brought in to play pretty meaningful roles.
Yeah, they're all non-roster invitees, which is interesting because that means they're coming in without guaranteed 25 and 40-man roster spots. But especially in the case of Parra and Solarte, you just don't see any way where they don't make the team. And so I think Gerardo Parra will either be a third or fourth outfielder for this Giants team. He crushed right-handed pitching, and not crushed in the terms of a power sense, but crushed in terms of this guy would have led the Giants in on-base percentage against right-handed pitchers last year, and they need guys to get on base. So I see him playing in one of the corners pretty regularly. You're looking at a guy who could play maybe 120 to 140 games. Then Solarte plays all over the infield. He's got power in his bat. The Giants like that. He's a switch hitter, so he's got versatility in that regard. Hits right-handed pitching better than he does left-handed pitching, so you can play him maybe at third base on days where you want to give Evan Longoria a rest against tough righties. And then in the case of Cameron Maben, he's the one addition right now is a non-roster invitee who I think will have a little bit more of a competition making this roster, just because Rule 5 draft pick Drew Ferguson is a guy the Giants like, high on base percentage last year. So I think that there will be competition for his job, and they've certainly done a lot to create that competition, that spirit this spring.
As of now, the way this lineup is constructed, what's your opening day outfield?
Ooh, that's a good question. As of right now,
I ask great questions, Kerry. Let's be real.
I would probably put Parra and Mac Williamson in the corners and Steven Duggar in center field, but a lot can change.
Oh boy, that's scary. That is scary. You know, just thinking about this team and what they're up against, being in the division with the LA Dodgers and even, you know, the Rockies and the strides that they made last year. And the Padres look like they might be headed in the right direction. That's a scary thought. Okay, pitching wise, do you expect them to add maybe another starter?
At this point, I think that they want to get through the first week of games and see how things go and see if they do have the type of quality depth that they think they've worked to build. But it wouldn't surprise me if you saw a trade. Maybe Solarte asserts himself as the everyday second baseman. You can make Joe Panik expendable and bring in another starter that can help you at the back end of the rotation. So I think everything is on the table right now in terms of additions. And another starting pitcher would make sense for this team.
Outside of Bryce Harper, and I know that the free agent pool, it's kind of a buyer's market right now. I know there's a lot of guys with a decent amount of major league experience that are still available, and we've seen Farhan tapping into that pool in the last couple of days. But is there a plan B? You know, because it sounds like they're definitely making an effort on Bryce Harper, but if he goes another route, I mean, is there a plan B this year as far as like another potential impact move that he could be looking to make?
I think there is, but I think that he has kept things really close to the vest right now. So my guess right now is that it's not a Adam Jones or a Carlos Gonzalez, the free agents that you see still on the market who haven't signed. My guess is that if there is a plan B, it comes through a trade, and maybe they give up Will Smith or Tony Watson from the back end of a bullpen that's supposed to be pretty strong this year to get another bat in that lineup. Because the Giants, you've talked about the outfield, I've talked about the outfield. I think everyone can agree that they need a little bit more out there, even with the new additions in Parra and Maven. So it'll be interesting to see, but I do think that he's got something cooking, even if we don't know publicly what that is.
Yeah, and the reality, too, is, Kerry, I mean, he's inheriting a team that's been pretty bad the last 2.5 years, and there's a lot of work that needs to be done. Let me ask you this. This is more of a philosophical question. I've heard this argument. Well, why would they go sign Bryce Harper? Because that's not going to help them contend this year anyway. And it's like, well, why would you ever sign any impact player ever if you were a bad team then? It just, to me, the more impact players that you can add and the more difference makers that you can bring onto your squad, it's got to be a piece at a time anyway. So to me, that seems like a pretty flawed logic.
Yeah, I mean, all 30 teams could use Bryce Harper. If your window is not going to be able to win within the next 8 to 10 years, what are you doing here?
Right.
You don't deserve to have a job as a general manager if you don't think that you have some sort of a core that can either win now or win within the next few years. I mean, yeah. You're right about that.
No doubt about that. Hey, did it surprise you at all that Smith and Watson weren't dealt in the offseason, those two guys in particular? Because, you know, Farhan's looking to add value and maybe bolster the depth at other spots. And you mentioned, I mean, the bullpen is in reasonably good shape. I mean, they're an injury or two away from being in bad shape like any team, but did it surprise you that Watson in particular, one of those guys, didn't get moved this offseason?
A little bit, just because you see the overwhelming depth that they have in the bullpen right now compared to other areas of the team, and so that seems to be where they could make a move and survive it. But he has said that, you know, some of the trade discussions are still ongoing and that's the function of a slow free agent market. So I think when other teams do start to pick up some of these players and we get closer to opening day, we could have a move. And maybe that's why the Giants are billing their closer competition as open competition, because Will Smith last season proved he could do the job. And maybe if they say, oh, Will Smith is our closer, and then they trade him 2 weeks later, it doesn't look so good with the fan base. So yeah. I think that could be still in play and on the table as we move through February and into March.
More likely scenario, Kerry, last one for you, and I appreciate you coming on. On February 17, 2019, which is the more likely outcome? Madison Bumgarner gets traded at some point during the season. Madison Bumgarner signs a long-term deal with the Giants. Madison Bumgarner leaves via free agency next offseason.
Oof, that's tough. I will say extension with the Giants. Just right now, and I think that a lot will depend on where this team is at the 2019 trade deadline. But I think that they've made it clear that Bumgarner has a storied history with this franchise. They don't like to give up players like that. And when you think about where this roster's at right now, they need a top-of-the-line starting pitcher. And I still think at the end of the day that come free agency, if Madison Bumgarner gets there in 2019, that the Giants will pay more than any other club for his services.
There you go. Kerry, man, really appreciate it. Always love our chats. At @KO_Crowley on Twitter, doing a great job for the Bang, the Barry News Group. Thanks, brother. Appreciate you as always.
Always appreciate you, too.
All right, good stuff from Kerry Crowley down there at spring training for the Giants down there in Arizona. Like, get Farhan on the phone, man. Let's get this thing done. I want to break some Bryce Harper news. All right. 888-957-9570 is the number. We are guest-free until the top of the hour. If you want to talk about the Giants and the state of this roster, we can do that. We can also get into the Golden State Warriors. Kevin Durant and Kyrie at practice today looking so friendly. They're joking around. So, of course, they're all going to the Knicks, right? Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's 95-7 the game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Yeah, it is Ryan Covey with you. By the way, you're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD, KG, HD1, KGMZ, San Francisco, aradio.com sports station. Wake up, everybody. It's Sunday morning, and we are talking about the NBA All-Star Weekend and your Golden State Warriors. We had a nice chat with Anthony Slater, who's out there in Charlotte. Just kind of some general takeaways if you're just joining us. This is my inaugural solo journey here on 95.7 The Game. I am Ryan Covey. You can follow me on Twitter at Ryan Covey. And if you want to join the conversation, 888-957-9570. Also, the Chilton Autobody text line, 95795. Warriors will get back in action Thursday against Sacramento. And JD and I were talking about this a little bit yesterday. Potential first-round matchups. We got into it with Tim Roy a little bit as well. And Tim did a really nice job breaking down the remaining schedules for some of these teams that populate the area of right around that eighth spot of teams that the Warriors could potentially face in round one. I'm telling you, I'm all in on Warriors-Kings. I want to see that series for a plethora of different reasons. What is a plethora? Well, the Kings with Buddy Hield and Bagley, and then they go and add Harrison Barnes. I just love the way that that team is being put together, and the fact that they haven't had a winning season without Rick Adelman as their head coach in their franchise history kind of blows my mind, but... To think that the Kings are on the verge of being relevant again, that's an intriguing prospect for me because it just makes basketball in Northern California that much stronger, that much more exciting. And to just get that NorCal rivalry, that I-80 rivalry jumping off with the Warriors and the Kings, because they've never both been good at the same time. When the Kings were good under Adelman in the late 90s, early 2000s, the Warriors were awful. So to have both of those teams be playoff caliber at the same time, that would be terrific. And hey, they've played a couple of really exciting games. So if you're looking for intrigue in round number one, Warriors-Kings, I think, would be a good place to start. Now, I know Lakers-Warriors would be, of course, storylines galore. Right now, Vegas has the Lakers not favored to make the playoffs, and they are sitting in the 10th spot right now at 28-29, a game under 500. And of course, they had the will they or won't they acquire Anthony Davis hanging over that team for a couple of weeks. And now, obviously, with the trade deadline being behind them, it's almost like the Lakers have said this is a mulligan season for this team, even, you know, with LeBron James. LeBron realized that this was going to be a process. That's why he signed a longer deal there. And I've even seen some of these stories the last, 2 weeks. Are we seeing the beginning of the end for LeBron? Is he wearing down? Well, he's 35, okay, and he's played a whole hell of a lot of basketball in his life, and he's in the finals every single year, which means, much like the players on the Golden State Warriors, he plays 2 months more of basketball than basically everybody else in the league. So, yeah, might be getting a little tired there, but this, I think, is going to be a recharge season for LeBron, and I would imagine if the Lakers start to slip a little more in the standings and it becomes clear they're not a playoff team, they're going to find a reason to shut LeBron down for the rest of the season, just to give him a bit of a recharge and get him ready for 2020, you know, the 2019-2020 season and beyond. And the Clippers, I would expect them to continue to fade. Look, if you're serious about making the playoffs, you don't trade Tobias Harris. I mean, it's that simple. You don't trade away one of your best players. And I think early in the year, the Clippers were really overachieving. And hey, with all due respect to Doc Rivers, Glenn, as Draymond refers to him as, he's done a nice job there creating something out of what was really a tough situation, losing Griffin and Paul and Jordan, all those guys that made that team a playoff contender for several years. They're all gone. So it's a whole new cast of characters there. And they've got basically a bunch of secondary players that have probably overachieved this year. I mean, they're still sitting there at 32-27. If you could hand pick the best matchup for the Warriors, and what I mean by best is probably would be the easiest to dispose of, I think you'd probably go Clippers. Because, see, if it's the Lakers, the LeBron factor, that whole storyline, LeBron versus the Warriors one more time, and maybe he finds a way to win a game, and God forbid it's one of the first two in Oracle. I mean, the Lakers have already come here and won already this year. You got the Luke Walton, Steve Kerr connection. It would just be a lot of pomp and circumstance and a lot of to-do for just a run-of-the-mill first-round matchup, which the Warriors should carve through them like a hot knife through butter. So I think that would probably be more trouble than you're looking for in round one. You know, the other teams, I guess, maybe the Timberwolves, if they ever get their act together, but it doesn't look like that's happening anytime soon, and that's just another team Jimmy Butler's left in his wake. So I would say, for me, I want them to play the Kings, but I think the best matchup would be the Clippers, maybe even the Spurs, because with all due respect to Greg Popovich in San Antonio and the job that they've done to stay relevant and stay contenders, they're probably going to be a four, maybe a five game series, but I think the Warriors would probably sweep that one. And then, you know, you look a little further on, and of course I know there's a lot that needs to be decided between now and playoff time, but I mean the Utah Jazz in round two, that would obviously be a pretty tough route to go. Playing in Utah is never easy, and their schedule in the beginning of the year was absolutely brutal. And I mean, they're a sub 500 road team, but in Utah, that's always been a tough place to play, and they give the Warriors problems there, so that would definitely not be ideal. But as far as the teams that I think that could give the Warriors the most problems, I do think it's the Oklahoma City Thunder, because Paul George is playing at such an elite level. Russell Westbrook, while I'm not a huge fan of Russell Westbrook triple-double hero ball, it's hard to argue with his production and just his passion for the game and just what a difference maker he can be on a nightly basis. I mean, the stat line tells the tale with that guy. And then, of course, with Steven Adams inside, and they can bang you and they can defend you and they can play physical. I do expect the Nuggets to maybe fade just a bit in the second half, and hopefully the Warriors are in a situation where they've got a little bit of cushion in the West. They might not be able to pull away from, like, say, the Bucks in the East for best record overall. Right now, the Bucks actually have a better record than the Warriors by two games, and that's probably something that'll continue. So to have home court throughout, they probably won't have the luxury of being able to rest guys later in the season. But make no mistake about it, whether the Warriors are the number one seed in the West, number one seed overall, whatever, Steve Kerr is not going to hesitate to give guys a night off here and there to make sure that they're well rested come this postseason run. But, you know, we're talking to Tim Bontemps about this yesterday. Sure, it's been to a certain degree the rest of the NBA, basically conceding the Larry O'Brien trophy to the Golden State Warriors the last few years. But see, last year, you had the Houston Rockets pushing the Dubs, and hell, the Warriors were the two seed last year. I mean, the Rockets won the West, and the Rockets had a home court in the conference finals, and the Rockets had a 3-2 series lead in that series. So it's not like it was so far-fetched that the Warriors could have potentially gone out. We thought they might go out. I mean, if the Rockets show up in Game 7, and if Chris Paul doesn't pull his hamstring, maybe they do. Maybe they don't, and I guess we'll never know, and the fact is the Warriors ended up beating them, and that's really all that matters. But even last year, it was, is this really going to be the foregone conclusion that we made it out to be? And then, you know, the year before, that was obviously year one of Kevin Durant. So, you know, come playoff time, is it all going to mesh? Is everything gonna shape up accordingly? And, of course, they went 16-1, so I think we had the answer to that. And that was the team following the 73-win team that lost in Game 7. So they had the chip on their shoulder and, you know, the desire to get back there and kind of right that wrong. But this year, you know, every year is its own entity. And this year, it's just different because there isn't that team really pushing them. I mean, with all due respect to the Denver Nuggets, I think if Curry doesn't get hurt earlier in the year, I think the Warriors probably are, you know, maybe 4 or 5 wins ahead of the pace that they're at even right now. Because most nights they can just show up, and if I could quote the great Leandro Barbosa, and do the show, most nights they can just show up and do the show, do the Warrior thing, and that's going to be enough to beat most teams. Now, we've seen the Warriors get every team's best punch night in and night out. And could you imagine just like what a burden that would be to carry? Like, think about your job, right? Whatever you do. Like, if I had to come in here every day and compete, like, with the greatest sports talk show hosts in the country, and they brought their A game every single day, because, you know, to go head up and beat me would be their litmus test and their benchmark, and they'd be the lead story on, you know, SportsCenter or whatever. To have that every day, or let's say, you know, you're an accountant, and, you know, the best accountant in the business is crunching books across from you every day, and you have to bring that same intensity every day, and everybody's gunning for you. Yeah, that's what you hope for, because that means you're the best and you're the standard, but boy, that's a lot to carry around, especially for a team that's been doing it for as long as the Warriors have. That's why, you know, we heard Anthony Slater a little bit earlier talking about this. Like, the Warriors, regular season games maybe don't mean a whole hell of a lot to this team. But let me ask you this at 888-957-9570. Have you sensed a change in the Golden State Warriors really since the turn of the year? And I trace it back to that loss they had to Portland and really the loss they had to the Rockets when they had the lead and they messed around. I think they were up 10 with like a 2 minutes left. And then the Rockets ended up coming back. Harden hits that dagger shot to win the game. I think for me, that was kind of the moment where the Warriors were like, okay, enough is enough. We're flipping the switch. They wanted to make sure that they were playing well before DeMarcus Cousins was integrated into the lineup. I think they won 7 in a row before Boogie came in there. Maybe it was 6. But point is, they didn't want to look to DeMarcus Cousins to be the quote-unquote savior of the Warriors season. It was more just the rich getting richer. So let me ask you this at 888-957-9570. Since the calendar has turned 2019, do you see a different version of the Golden State Warriors? Do they have a little more intent? Do they have a little more ferocity to their game? Because I am seeing that. And now, in spells, in a vacuum, maybe they'll lose a little focus in a quarter here for a half there. But I'm just talking about the overall vibe of the team, the overall mood, their overall demeanor as a squad. I just sense that they are now, the calendar's turned 2019. They know what's ahead of them. And I was getting on this a little bit yesterday, but I think it's so important to note this. We talk about players and their hubris and how acutely aware they are of all the things being said about them. You know, Kevin Durant with his burner accounts or, just reading the press clippings. And we see this around the NBA, guys being so aware of what's being said about them, be it writers or, bloggers or talk show hosts. Whatever. We know that these guys care. We know that they've all got social media accounts. They've all got friends that text them things. The way Alex says, they all have access to the internet too, okay? So they know what's being said about them. And they know most of these guys, the superstar players, the thing that's most important to them is kind of their place in the history of the game. Like, did you leave your mark? Are you, one of those, we were talking about icons earlier. Are you a quote-unquote icon? Will history remember you, and will they remember you for all the right reasons? What the Golden State Warriors have in front of them right now, and this is Steve Kerr's job to remind them of this, and not that these guys should need reminding about this, but they're on the cusp of something pretty amazing. And they've already, look, if the Golden State Warriors never won another playoff game again under Steve Kerr, this would still be regarded as a golden era of Warriors basketball. Make no mistake about that. But they are right on the doorstep of next level awesomeness. I'm talking shortlist greatest teams of all time. And now that the calendar's turned 2019, now that we've got the All-Star break and we can see what's ahead of us, there's that 25-game run into the postseason, and then it's that push for a three-peat, it's that push for a 4-5. These guys can put themselves in elite company. And if you're looking for motivation, what more motivation should you need than that? Especially for a group of guys that are so self-aware of their place in history. Kevin Durant, I guarantee you, it matters to Kevin Durant when he hangs up the sneakers and when it's all said and done. It matters to Kevin Durant that when people look back on his career, he's on the proverbial shortlist. He's mentioned in that rarefied air of the greatest to ever play it. Steph Curry, probably not as important to Steph, maybe for different reasons. It's important to Steph, but probably for a little bit of a different reason. Steph, just because he wants to be great for his teammates and he wants to deliver championships for the city of Oakland because he's all time. And even Klay Thompson, because again, he wants to make his own mark and establish his own legacy, probably independent of his father and what he did with the Showtime Lakers. And he's already done that. But my point is, when these guys are all done, they want to be able to be considered as some of the greatest to ever play it. I mean, think about Draymond Green. Think about his story. Draymond can talk about, he can name every single person that was drafted ahead of him. He rolls every day into that gym with that huge chip on his shoulder. We see it in the way he plays basketball. So obviously, knowing that that's the motivating force in Draymond's world, of course it matters to him how he's going to be perceived by history. And what these guys have in front of them, I mean, let's face it, the rest of the NBA, although no GM out there would ever admit it, we all know what time it is. It's three-peat time. The rest of the NBA knows it. Hell, they were already the favorite. Then they messed around and brought in DeMarcus Cousins. They've got Steve Kerr, who's the best possible coach for this group. I mean, keep in mind, I'm a guy who thought at the time, wait, why the hell are the Warriors firing Mike Jackson? Why are they getting rid of Mark Jackson? And now that we are in, you know, this era of Steve Kerr, it's like, oh, that's why. Because he's the perfect voice for this Warriors team. So I just think since we've seen the calendar turn to 2019, we've seen a different intent from this team. They've got a different attitude about them. And I think it's refreshing for Warriors fans who maybe thought, do they care about the regular season? Well, to the extent that they need to, but what they really care about is what they have the opportunity to do, which is have a three-peat and win a fourth title in 5 years, which puts them into rarefied air. Let's go out to Stephen Vallejo real quick. Stephen, you're on a 95.7 The Game, 888-957-9570. What's going on, dude?
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Great. What's up?
I think the biggest kind of benchmark of this turn since the beginning of the year with the Warriors has been in their turnovers.
Absolutely.
Draymond's leading the way. Like, he's been locked in. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but his ratio is out of this world. And just, you know, the other night, what do they have, under 10 turnovers? So I think that's a big thing there. Just real quick on Bryce Harper. If you're the Giants, you absolutely have to get him. And it better not come out that you were outbid, because I don't want to hear anything about money. It's a soft salary cap. It would be such a big turning point. Does it make them automatic contenders overnight? Probably not. But like you were saying earlier, it'll get people out to the park to at least watch him, and it would just be a big pickup for the team. Thanks, Ryan.
All right, good stuff. And yeah, Steven, the first thing you hit on there was absolutely something I wanted to get to as well. And when the Golden State Warriors are playing basketball the right way, they're not turning the basketball over. As a matter of fact, even in the loss in Portland, they only committed 9 turnovers, and it was the first time during the year the Warriors have committed less than 10 turnovers in consecutive games. They also only had 7 versus Utah, and Steve Kerr is always going to be harking on the fact that if the Warriors aren't turning the basketball over, then they're doing the right things and they're playing the Warrior-style basketball. What's up, Lucas?
Quick point to back up what Steven said on that caller right there.
Sure.
Since the turn to the new year, I just did some quick math.
Look at you.
Draymond himself has only turned the ball over at least 4 times twice,
right?
Okay, in that stretch. He did that 10 times before that.
Wow. And his assist-to-turnover ratio has been off the charts. And when you watch the Warriors play, I mean, everybody, the first thing you think about when you think about Draymond Green is he's a defensive stopper, right? And he's the straw that stirs the drink. He's the anchor on the defensive end. But what he does for this team offensively, the way he pushes the ball up the floor, and that allows your point guard, Steph Curry, who's the best shooting point guard in NBA history, it allows him to roam off the ball. And when the Warriors are at their best, they're making that extra pass. And, you know, when they're forcing teams to switch out, and whether they decide to run a pick and roll, whatever, they can just absolutely eat teams up with their off-ball movement. And because Draymond is so adept at passing and he's got such great vision on the floor, that allows Curry to roam a bit more instead of having to have the ball in his hands and run the offense through him. Because while I love Curry with the ball in his hands in the open floor, in the half court set, not so much. I mean, not that he's not a perfectly good option, but he's just so much better with the ball in his hands on the break. And that's the same thing with Draymond Green. And obviously that's when the Warriors are at their best, when they're getting up and down the floor and when they're going on these runs that bury teams. They're getting stops at one end. They're protecting the basketball, and they're sharing the basketball. Well, you know what happens when they hit that 30-assist mark? They're basically unbeatable, although maybe not to the extent they have been in years past this year, but that's kind of the benchmark for the Warriors. And I'll tell you this much. In the Steve Kerr press conference, there are two things that Steve Kerr will always harken back to in his press conferences, and it's never about the way they shoot the basketball. He knows who's on his roster. He knows what he has as far as offensive firepower is concerned. The two things that Steve Kerr will always hark back to and always reference in the post game as the true barometer of how they're playing: turnovers and defensive intensity. Because Steve Kerr knows, like all of us that watch this team on a regular basis and know about this team, they know what separates the Golden State Warriors from the rest of the teams in basketball is their ability to defend. And the only time the Warriors really are beatable is when other teams play well and the Golden State Warriors beat themselves. And how do they do that when they're not locked in defensively and they're turning the basketball over? So Steve Kerr knows that better than anybody else. And most Warriors fans know that as well. By the way, Lucas just brought this in. Jason Tatum promising the Celtics will win the NBA Finals this year. So apparently, I'm telling you that while I'm telling you that the rest of the NBA is conceding that the Golden State Warriors are winning the NBA title this year, Jason Tatum is promising. So what happens if it doesn't come to fruition? I mean, is that a broken promise? Then could we never take Jason Tatum at his word again? And what's so funny when individual players make these bold predictions in team sports? To me, that's a little bit out of pocket because why on earth would you make that kind of proclamation? What if the Celtics won? They haven't won anything. And by the way, how about you just worry about winning the East right now, Jason Tatum? You're 37-21. You're 6.5 games behind the Bucks. Right now, you're tied for fourth in the Eastern Conference. Now, by the way, an Eastern Conference that LeBron James doesn't even play in anymore. But yeah, you're guaranteeing, you're promising that you're going to win the NBA Finals. All right. Nice work. And, yeah, just add a little more pressure to the Celtics because clearly they've been so good when the pressure's been on this year. How about you just worry about getting along with Kyrie and seeing if Gordon Hayward has anything to offer at this point and making sure you can at least navigate through the Eastern Conference? If I had to pick my favorite, though, in the East, I think I still would go Celtics, too. I really do. And I'm kind of hoping that we get Celtics-Warriors in the NBA Finals. That'd be a good one. You get Kyrie back out here one more time. You get the whole East Coast, West Coast thing. And I mean, think about it. The Celtics, during this couple of years under Steve Kerr, they've played the Warriors tough. Remember, a couple of years ago, I know this is a much different Warriors team now, but remember it was that game in double overtime a couple of years ago in Boston when the Warriors got off to, what was it, that 24-0 start, and then they ended up losing the next night, and then later in the year, the Celtics beat the Warriors at Oracle, so they've played them tough, and this is, you know, they are one of those teams that, you know, could potentially match up well against the Warriors. You know, Horford's got the size, they've got those young wings as well, but until the Boston Celtics show me that they can be the toast of the Eastern Conference. I mean, right now, you're a game behind the Indiana Pacers, who lost their superstar. What, they lose Oladipo like a month ago? And they're still ahead of you? Come on. So, save the bold proclamations. I don't really like, in general, players making those kind of proclamations. See, I'm a big fan of actually walking the walk and not talking the talk. And really, the only... So, what good could ever come of that? So, you win the NBA title, so you can have your moment and say, ha ha, I told you so. That's the only good that can come of that. You have a moment in time where you can say, I told you I was going to do that. Otherwise, all that can come of that is failure or disappointment. And I don't have a problem with people believing in themselves. No, no, don't misread me there. I don't have a problem with a player saying, hey, we believe we can win the NBA title. We believe we can do this. We're doing things the right way. I believe in this group of guys. We're going to do everything in our power. Our mission is to win the NBA title. There's a big difference between a mission statement and an out-of-pocket bold proclamation. And this with Tatum, that's the latter there. And while I love his style and he's, you know, one of the exciting young players in the game, hold off on the bold proclamations and keep in mind, this is the Golden State Warriors world, my man, and y'all are just living in it. All right, top of the hour. We'll talk a little bit about Antonio Brown. He went on Twitter yesterday and did a Q&A with Steelers fans. And boy, Antonio Brown, he just never one to mince words. Also, how about Matt Kuchar getting internet shamed into paying his caddy a little more money? That was a pretty interesting story. We could talk about that. And of course, we can continue the Giants conversation. And yes, Bryce Watch 2019 is ongoing. It is 95.7 The Game. It is Ryan Covey with you on a Sunday morning.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
Yeah, just stretching out on a Sunday morning. What's happening, everybody? Ryan Covey with you. My inaugural solo foray. And by the way, I'll be hanging out with Daryl the Guru Johnson 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday this week. Matt Steinmetz on a little vacation, getting a little time off. So very honored and excited to fill in that role. And just if you're just joining us, I just ended up coming over to 95.7. And just made the announcement a couple of days ago. And obviously me being from the Bay Area and me being in this business for a few years, I am very aware of everything going on here at 95.7. And I just got to tell you, I'm so excited to be joining the movement over here. I've got a passion for this stuff. I live for it. I am a sports fan like all of you out there listening to me. And I feel like, you know, I'm the luckiest guy in the world to have the opportunity to do this. You may not agree with everything that I say, but that's cool. That's the essence of sports talk. Isn't that what we do? I'm totally fine with that. And I love the opinions coming in on the text line. Everybody shouting out on Twitter. Thank you so much. It means the world to me. It's been a kind of a whirlwind the last 2 weeks. But to land here is an absolute honor and a privilege. And I'm just fired up, man. I live in the here and now. And more importantly, I like to think about the great things that could come in the future. So I'm excited. And this just seems like a natural fit. I heard for years, Covey, you belong on 95.7. That's your speed, my man. And everything I've heard so far and everything I've seen from the people here, open arms, baby. And shout out everybody at 95.7, the management, the other hosts, all the producers, everybody here has come in. I've noticed everybody texting me, following me on Twitter, at Ryan Covey, just saying what's up, man. The listeners as well. A lot of people have shown me a lot of love, and I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that. And, of course, the big fellas, Danny Freisinger and Matt Nahigi in here, just so much love and appreciation for giving me this platform, man. I don't take it lightly for one frickin' second. All right, Antonio Brown. And let me just start by saying I love Antonio Brown, the football player. Like, his rise to prominence, I'm a huge fantasy football player, right? I had to narrow it down to four leagues last year, but I'm typically a five-plus league kind of a guy. Just, I can't get enough of this stuff. Done a lot of fantasy football podcasts, et cetera, like a lot of you guys. I live for the trophy. I live for the thrill of the lineup set. I live for the Sunday morning lineup tinker, which never comes back to bite me in the ass or anything, right? I live for waiver wires, things like that. I know a lot of you out there feel the same way. And the rise of Antonio Brown in the NFL the last, 6-7 years, and watching him go from pretty unheralded wide receiver to superstar in the NFL has been pretty incredible. The problem that I've had with Antonio Brown the last couple of years is, along with that rise, has become his joining of the Diva Wide Receiver Club. And this goes back to Keyshawn Johnson and Chad Ochocinco and Randy Moss and Terrell Owens. It's like, and Odell Beckham Jr. It's like, what is it with these guys? And Tim Ryan once told me, the further guys play away from the ball, the louder they are. The further they play away from the line of scrimmage, the louder that they are. Corners and safeties and wide receivers. It's just kind of a truism across the board. And Antonio Brown, the last couple of years, has been no stranger to this. Now, we all know about the picture he put out, I think it was on Instagram, with a 49ers jersey superimposed on him, said he would love to come play in the Bay. And, hey, much like the great Bob Barker said, if the price is right, baby, and that is the only way. Let me put it to you like this. And by the way, we'll talk to David Lombardi of The Athletic about this in just a few minutes. But I sure as hell aren't giving up my first-round draft pick for Antonio Brown. No chance in hell. You know what Antonio Brown's not going to do? Help me get after the quarterback next year, which is need number 1, 2, and 3 for the San Francisco 49ers. The reason that Antonio Brown in particular excites me is, A, he's already stated that he wants to come here. And so it's not like, and I know he said winning is important to him, this and that. Antonio Brown, he's even said he's made like $70 million in his career, so it's not about the money. Yeah, I got a tweet in front of him right now. In the Q&A he did yesterday, what would you tell people that say you only want a new team to get a new contract? He said, not for the money, it's for the love of the sport, the commitment to win relentlessly, consistently and passionately. Plus, I made $70 million. It's public record. Not to be cocky, just truth. Time to play for my own team, AB84, the family. All right, fair enough. And let's be real. If he's playing for wins, well, I don't know if San Francisco is the place. They haven't done a whole hell of a lot of winning the last couple of years, but I think it speaks to the bigger picture that around the NFL, it's known that things have changed here in San Francisco under John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan, and they're building things the right way. And the Jimmy Garoppolo injury last year really hurt what I think could have been a huge year number two for this team. Maybe not quite playoffs. They're not there yet, but I don't think this team's as far away as people might think. And bringing in Antonio Brown, the only guy with 6 straight 100-yard reception seasons, an absolute game wrecker on Sunday. Bringing in somebody of his ilk, of his caliber, what that will do to the rest of this offense. Could you imagine? First of all, you get Jerick McKinnon back next year, which it was always just really funny to me how much they talked about what a crucial loss Jerick McKinnon was. And I understand why. I mean, they signed him to be their lead back. But the guy never took a snap as a 49er, so it was just hard for me to picture the lost production of a guy that never actually played a down in a regular season game for the 49ers. It's kind of an interesting thing. And a guy that was never a lead back in Minnesota in the first place. Hell, he was like splitting time with Matt Asiata at one point in his career. But he is handpicked by Kyle Shanahan as the right kind of back for this offense. And while I think about what Kyle Shanahan was able to accomplish in Atlanta and what they were able to do with that offense, I mean, think about it. You got Tevin Coleman, you got Devontae Freeman, you got Julio Jones. This offense with the San Francisco 49ers, you could roll Jerick McKinnon, you could roll Matt Breida, and you could roll Antonio Brown. You know what that would do for a guy like George Kittle, or a guy like Marquise Goodwin, or a guy like Dante Pettis, or a guy like Jimmy Garoppolo, for that matter, hell. To have that kind of a difference maker, that kind of an impact player, that makes life so much easier for everybody else. Because what we haven't seen with the 49ers, and God bless Pierre Garçon, it just never quite happened for him with the 49ers. But to have an impact player like Antonio Brown, and again, provided the price is right, that could make everybody else on this offense that much more potent because of the amount of attention that would have to be paid to Antonio Brown. Now, two things would need to happen for me if the 49ers were going to be serious about Antonio Brown. And we'll talk to David Lombardi of The Athletic about this very topic in just a few moments. One, what a kind of compensation do you got to give to Pittsburgh? Because let's face it, every time Antonio Brown opens his mouth right now, he hurts what the Steelers can hope to get back for him in return. He said Ben Roethlisberger has an owner's mentality, and really, that's a huge slap in Ben Roethlisberger's face. And while I can kind of see where he's coming from, because Roethlisberger's been there for, what, 14, 15 years now, and he's got that kind of way about him. He threw Antonio Brown under the bus early in the year for running a bad route, and Big Ben always likes to blame other people. But the Steelers, they've tried so much to fix that defense ever since Dick LeBeau left. I think their last six first-round picks have been on the defensive side of the ball because the offense has been pretty damn good, but they're losing Le'Veon, and it sounds like they're going to lose Antonio Brown. But with Antonio Brown being so public with his discourse with the franchise, and he's going to meet with Art Rooney the second and see if some kind of resolution can be made, I think he's getting traded. I think that's a foregone conclusion. But it's just going to be a matter of what can they expect to get in return for him. And I think that whatever that value is goes down basically every time Antonio Brown opens up Twitter right now. So you'd have to make sure you were getting him for the right price. Not a first-round pick. I mean, maybe a second-round pick. And I know they don't have a second-round pick this year, but I guess maybe I'd go a second-round pick. But the other side of it, and the compensation, that's for John Lynch and people that get paid to make those kind of decisions. But the other side of it is, what kind of teammate is Antonio Brown at this point? What's the mood like in that 49ers locker room? And how much of there is a desire to add a potential impact player that could also be a bit of a distraction? Not comparing his situation to Reuben Foster's for one iota. That's apples and oranges. I understand that. But will John Lynch be leery of bringing in another potential dark spot in the locker room, a potential distraction, a potential negative vibe into that locker room when you have so many young, impressionable players and you're trying to build a winner long term? Antonio Brown could help you in 2019, 2020, probably even 2021. I think Antonio Brown has 3 years of what could be potentially high-level football. He could have a lot of terrific moments with Jimmy Garoppolo. They could do a lot of special things on the football field together. I absolutely believe that. But what kind of Antonio Brown are you going to get? Is he going to be, hey, I'm out of Pittsburgh, praise the Lord, I'm ready to, you know, just be a good teammate and toe the line and fly straight? Or is it, I'm Antonio Brown, this outspoken diva receiver who's going to clap back at every little thing that comes my way, and I'm going to be an S disturber, and I'm going to rock the boat, and if I'm not getting the right amount of targets, I'm going to upset the balance of power. Because one thing Kyle Shanahan's offense has showed us, he doesn't really care about the salary number attached. He doesn't care about your career production. He cares about, can you help them on that game, that play, that drive, in that very moment? That's all Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch care about. They're not about the individual. It's about the team mentality. And I think a lot of teams will try and sell you that, but I think the 49ers are legitimately trying to build that. So does Antonio Brown go against the grain of that? Maybe a little bit. Could be a lot bit. But you can't not investigate the prospect of bringing in a guy of this caliber.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.